Hey everybody, it's Zach Harper from The Athletic, The Athletic's podcast, The Athletic Writing, Power Rankings, and now The Athletic's new YouTube show, The Restricted Area, a weekly NBA show with myself and Wasney Lambre, the cultural anthropologist, going around finding the most interesting stories from the NBA, giving some historical context, and trying to figure out just what the hell is going on. This week's episode is up. You go to The Athletic's YouTube channel, you will find it, in which we talk about the process. That's right. Daryl Morey has taken over the process in Philadelphia. But how did it get there? What did Sam Hinkie have designed? What did he do right? What did he do wrong? How was it taken from him? All that plus anonymous agents are taking shots at Rich Paul and Clutch Sports. Why don't they do it with anybody else? It's just Rich and Clutch. We get into that and a lot more. Again, go to the YouTube channel for The Athletic. Check out The Restricted Area. Smash that subscribe button. Hit that like. Give it a nice comment. Have some witty banter in the comments. Make sure you share it with your friends all around the internet. Give that link out. Retweet it on social media. All that fun stuff. And we'll see you every single week right there on The Athletic's YouTube channel for The Restricted Area.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Coming up on today's show, we dig into the Rockets implosion. We talk about some of the fake trades floating around and the draft process for teams since the draft is coming up.
This is Nerdish You Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Welcome to another Nerdish You Wrote on the Athletic NBA Show. Kind of forgot how to do this. It's been a little while. I'm Dave Dufour. I got Mo. I got Seth. What's up, guys? Anything happened while we were gone? Or
nothing. Nothing.
Well, you missed the player tiers.
Oh, I did miss it. You know, I actually, that was my first vacation. I was told that I was very much missed on the show that you guys did with John Hollinger. Because yeah, I wasn't there to push.
Really?
I was told because I would have pushed back on the Anthony Davis ranking. I think that, Anthony Davis clearly.
Not a ranking.
That's right. I forgot.
Don't get slapped, Dave. Don't get slapped on the first day back on the podcast. Don't.
I forgot that you very, very clearly said that your rankings were not rankings. So I apologize.
Words have meaning, Dave.
Yeah. The big thing that I've been reading the last couple of days, including a crazy report from our own Kelly Eco, Shams Charania, and Sam Amick, the Rockets are blowing up internally. They don't have Mike D'Antoni anymore. They don't have Daryl Morey. Those two guys were kind of like, I don't know, what were they? Soothsayers for that team to a certain degree for years. And it seems like in the bubble, that kind of fell apart. Mo, you host Brody and the Beard. I think you guys are going to have to change the name.
Yeah, no, that's been a running joke the past few days, especially between Kelly and I on text messages of maybe we have to start considering that. I just think double down and just go Brody, not even the Beard. Just
Brody,
go Brody
and the Brody.
Yeah, like let's just go for it.
Maybe nobody in the Beard.
I mean, honestly, that's kind of how it's looking, right? I mean, when you consider the reports that are coming out, I mean, you've got role players. I mean, 20-minute a night guys complaining about their role. You've got PJ Tucker complaining about role and accountability and money. It seems like this team, it's probably been fractured for a little while, but it certainly seems like the seams have burst at this point.
Well, it's interesting. I think for a while, you know, this was the epitome of, wow, everybody's on the same page, right? You were calling Daryl and D'Antoni soothsayers, you know, and you know, to a degree, the two of them and their star player, James Harden, were all on the same page, how to play, how to move forward and everything like that. And that's rare. Actually, you see organization like that. And that was something that was really positive going forward. And I honestly, Dave, it sucks, but we can go all the way back to game 5, 2017 and Chris Paul pulling the hamstring. I think that's kind of where things began to slowly unravel. And just kind of a sad death spiral, you know, that just happened. 27 mysteries, that whole deal. The next season, they can't beat the Warriors after they lose Kevin Durant. You know, there's a whole series of things. You make the trade for Chris Paul, bring in Russ. Obviously a crazy season this year, but then you go into super extreme small ball and start to have a little bit of success with that, but then the bubble comes and things go completely awry there. I just think this has been a long time coming, and ultimately, you know, the one thing I think where it all started is ownership. You know, Tillman right. Fertitta comes in, and, you know, look, I think this would be an interesting question. I don't know off the top of my head, but, like, has a team ever won a championship and not been in the tax?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I don't think the first Warriors champions were in the tax.
Okay.
That sounds about right, because everybody was on the cheap contracts, yeah.
But finals teams overwhelmingly tend to be in the tax, yes.
You got to compete, and you got to pay, and this is something that he's been trying to duck, despite saying, I'm totally fine paying the tax. But he tends to kind of duck it around the trade deadlines. They always make some sort of move to cut salary.
Are you implying that his surprise at ducking the tax wasn't genuine? Look, ultimately, I think you can actually go a little bit farther. Losing Melo. I can't even finish the joke. All right. So what we know about team culture is that certainly you can have a coach set the culture, and that works well. Like, but you need the player. Your best player has to set the culture. If he's not the hardest worker, how do you get everyone else to buy in? I mean, this is why I think Steph Curry doesn't get enough credit. James Harden has kind of just been running guys out of town since he got to Houston.
I think before we get to that, we talk about culture as the driver of success. And I think there's an equally strong argument that it's the kind of the result of success. And so while things were going good, the culture was good. The issue that they kind of ran into is when you, to use kind of a gaming term, when you min-max as much as they do, where you get just enough of this and just enough of that to you know, just enough defense, just enough rebounding, just enough size, what have you, to stay above water, to let everything out, to let your, you know, your ball dominant score maximize his ability. If those things actually fall slightly underwater, it goes bad, and goes bad hard. And I think that's as much what we've seen, is just, you know, no longer just getting away with the bare minimum of all these kind of other things around Harden. And I do think that ties into what Mo is talking about, because I think going that extreme min-max route is brought on in part by not having the financial flexibility for something more kind of robust and resilient. So there was no plan B because they couldn't afford a plan B.
What do you do if you're the Rockets from this, you know, at this point? We saw the role players who certainly could not be happy just sitting and watching James Harden dribble the basketball, right? It was a Harden or Westbrook show. If you were on that team, you were standing in the corner. Did they go too far in, you know, trying to boost Harden's stats, trying to just cater to him? And certainly they were successful. I mean, they were within one game of making the NBA Finals. They were the Chris Paul hamstring injury away from making the NBA Finals. But did they go too far? Remember that season with Chris Paul, they kind of went away from that a little bit more. Chris Paul sort of, you know, gave them the option to run regular offense when Harden was off the court.
Right. And I think that was kind of the thing there. You know, we're seeing it more and more. It's my criticism for the Bucks. It's my criticism for a few other teams. When you play just one way, you know, and one style, it at a certain point you become easy to figure out. It's just kind of that simple. And I think when they leaned so heavily into that Harden run, I mean, the second season with Chris Paul, they did kind of just turn him into a corner shooter, you know, with him on the court with Harden. There was less of that. And I thought, you know, before all this got crazy, you know, Steven Silas came in and immediately talked about, hey, we need to start playing with optionality. We need to change things up and make things a little more difficult. And this is something I've been screaming for this team for a while. And, you know, they swung this way because they found success, but at the same time, it was not ultimately going to be the success. It wasn't the roadmap all the way. Because like you said, when they had CP and they were playing it a little bit differently, when Harden would go to the bench, CP would spread the ball around, guys got more involved, got more comfortable, and it was probably their best run in that iteration. So I think for the Rockets, they got to find ways to play, be able to play differently. And some of that's on Harden. He's got to be willing to get off the ball and move, cut, screen, do all the little things that will make things actually easier for him on the court. I think it would make him harder to defend. It would actually open up his game a lot more, I think, and make their offense hum. But maybe at this point, we might be too far gone.
Well, it certainly appears, if you believe the reports, which we have no reason not to, that Russell Westbrook felt there was a lack of accountability. Just top to bottom, lack of accountability. When guys didn't do their job, no one was on them. And certainly we, you know, Mike D'Antoni kind of has a little bit of a hands-off approach. I don't know the last time I saw Mike D'Antoni get into a player, you know, for making, you know, mistake or, you know, just not being in the scheme or something like that. I can't remember that. And how do you fix that on a team that has been going down this path for this long? I mean, it certainly feels like we're looking at a blow up situation.
Oh, well, no, I mean, you got to kind of, we're at that point now. I think they've run this course with this team, you know, with Westbrook demanding kind of a trade. You know, this isn't new stuff. This whole accountability thing, you know, it's getting kind of old. We're seeing stories, you know, I mean, Kelly Eco, Sam Amick, and Shams Charanian wrote a piece together, and there's a bunch of tidbits in there. They tried to bring Trevor Ariza back, and he wasn't willing to come back unless he got an apology. Like, okay, well, there's something there. You know, like it's silly, but like what offended him so much? Like what is going on there? In that sense where that's something he wants to ask for. You have an upset PJ Tucker. You know, you have Austin Rivers who's upset. Now, like, look, some of these guys were like, look, come on, dude. Like, really, do you have much of a reason? Daniel House, do you have much of a reason to be upset? Like, you're in the league because of this team, you know?
And also, and he shouldn't say anything now, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's not forget the whole stuff with the bubble. But, you know, I think there's a lot of that stuff there. And I think ultimately – accountability is something that matters across the board to every team. You know, guys see it when you don't go after, when a coach doesn't go after a guy, you know, a star player or whatever for missing rotations, but then jumps on like the ninth man for that, you know, players see that and register that in their mind. And that's something to them of like, oh, he's treating him. He's afraid to go at him, but he'll come at me for screwing up. And I think there's a whole bunch of that. And I think we see this play out throughout the league and over time. And I think that's something that, you know, they're going to have to address. And I think that's something Steven Silas would have to be the one to address and this situation and change that culture. But, you know, again, now we're just in such, I don't even know what's going to happen, Dave. We're in such a weird spot with this team.
Oh, I know what's going to happen. We're going to get some trades. All right, guys, trade season. It is trade season. We got the draft coming up next week. We got free agency starting next week. This is an absolutely action-packed off-season schedule, which I am in no way prepared for. But I know that we're all going to get an alert from Shams letting us know that Russell Westbrook has been traded. Where is he going? Now, I texted you guys last night. I was completely joking that Russ is going to be amazing in Charlotte. And then Shams reports it today. We're recording on Thursday. So if he gets, you know, if an agreement in principle comes out, just know that we're a little bit behind. But what happened if Russell Westbrook gets traded to the Charlotte Hornets? I actually feel like it's kind of sad. I want to see him on a contender. Am I the only one here that needs to see Russell Westbrook on a contender? Or do we want to see him, you know, raise the Charlotte Hornets to an 8 seed? Do we think that happens?
What contender is he on?
None. That's the thing. I think it's either Houston or he's going to like Charlotte, Orlando, maybe. I don't know.
How are you not bringing up the Knicks? How are the Knicks not right on your mind? Like, how is this not screaming the perfect union of the New York Knicks and Russell Westbrook? How is that? How does that not enter your head?
I mean, it would certainly be fun.
I mean, here's the thing about the contender stuff, Dave. What contender is he going to fit on?
None.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, like,
Who wants a 6'4" center?
Right. Look at the contortions Houston had to go through to, you know, make it work with him. And it did. It worked for you know, there's the 2 months that they, you know, basically from when they phased Capella out till the, you know, the shutdown happened. They were pretty good. He especially was really good. But then again, you saw that when it wasn't quite working in the bubble, it really didn't work.
And I don't know how much stock we can put into what we saw from him in the bubble. Remember, he was recovering from COVID. We don't know how that affected his conditioning. I mean, he didn't look right. Like, we can say that.
And then he pulled the quad. I mean, and then he pulled his quad. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but to what Seth was saying, you had to go to so many levels and make so many moves to make him an efficient player in that scenario. I don't understand a contender that's going to do that. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's not going to be somebody the Lakers want. You know, this isn't a guy that there's the rumors that the Clippers kicked the tires on. And I'm like, this for me, for entertainment's sake, it would be phenomenal to watch, you know, but I'm like, this is not who the Clippers should be going after. I think there's a whole kind of thing. That's why I think for him, the only place really for him to go to is a team that's just on the outside of the playoffs that, you know, he might be able to carry them into. Charlotte as a team, as you said. For me, I just think it's the Knicks because they need a star, so to speak. And I just think the guys they're going to get right now are all going to be guys well kind of past their prime or slowly on the downside of their career. Yeah, this is the guy for me. I don't know what the trade would look like. I have no idea. But like, this is the guy where I'm like, oh, this screams the Knicks to me.
You know who it's what's a lot more interesting to me isn't where Russ goes, although I do think that's interesting. It's the rest of that team. If they're going to completely remake the roster, which we all kind of agree they need to do, where are those other guys going? And in particular, like, do they keep Robert Covington? Which I think they should, but that's a contract that fits right into the Warriors trade exception.
I've already been yelled at for suggesting that someone the Warriors should be targeting. You know, it's like, oh, you don't trade the number two pick for Robert Covington. Well, Anthony Edwards? Do you trade Anthony Edwards for Robert Covington if you're trying to win in the next 2 years?
Yeah.
I think you do.
Well, this is sort of like a draft strategy thing, which, you know, we'll get into next week. But I don't get why you don't want the guy who can play now and is really good. I don't know that Anthony Edwards is ever going to be as good as Robert Covington is today. And Robert Covington fits perfectly on the Warriors. So, I mean, I don't know who yelled at you for that, but they're wrong.
Warriors fans.
Oh, okay. Well, you're wrong. Yeah. What about PJ Tucker? I mean, we know he's not really happy with his contract. I think that he wants to stay in Houston. I mean, it seems like, you know, he's kind of part of the community there.
I mean, he has said he'd like to finish his career out in Houston. But again, it's he wants to get paid. And I think you said it, Dave, before we started recording. But like, I don't know who's giving him the bag that he thinks he's going to get. He's what, 36, you know, 6'5" power forward, you know, and he has value. I think there's teams that he could really help, but I don't know if he thinks he's a $15 million a year guy at this stage in his career. You know, there's a lot of questions. So, you know, I think he's a guy that could find, you know, teams could find an opportunity to steal away. He, you know, besides Covington, this is a guy I'd kick the tires on a little bit. I'm not sure how much value Eric Gordon has with that extension. It's a pretty big contract, and he had a pretty rough year. And, you know, his health is always shaky, but there's a few interesting pieces.
Yeah. And some other reports came out today about another, we won't say star, but a former all-star, Victor Oladipo. Apparently not all as rosy in Indiana as I think we've talked about privately. What's the Oladipo market look like? It just seems like this trade season right now is a bunch of guys that nobody really wants. And I don't mean that like disparagingly. I just mean if you have Oladipo, you probably don't hate it, but you're not going to go give up anything for a guy coming off the quad injury who, you know, when he came back, he had some nice games and he had a lot of really bad games. So where do you go as a team right now?
Drew Holiday.
He's the one guy who keeps popping up. Pretty much fits everywhere, right? Like someone today, I think it was Kevin O'Connor, reported that the Celtics are interested in Jrue Holiday.
And Jared Dubin replied to that by saying that we'll find out in a week that they almost made the trade, except they weren't willing to include Tremont Waters in the deal. So
also, just so you know, the Boston Celtics are also interested in Anthony Davis, Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's all of that, you know, and everybody is. Everybody's always interested in this, you know, these guys. So I don't know how they get there with that.
Where does Jrue Holiday really does fit everywhere, but what teams should be taking swings at Jrue Holiday? My favorite team for him is the Nuggets, right? Yeah. I think he moves the Nuggets up a level, right? Like we already said, we're no longer patting their head and telling them good job. This puts them into.
We need to make Seth a shirt, by the way, for that. Just so you know. Sorry to interrupt, Denver. But continue on. But
I think Jrue Holiday gives them that defensive guard who doesn't hurt them offensively as Gary Harris has when he's forgotten how to shoot. I'd love to see what they could put together to get him. I just don't know that they're willing to part with MPJ or future draft picks.
That seems like a no-brainer to me.
I agree.
It's funny because there are teams that are always hesitant because I'm with you guys. This is a no-brainer. You want MPJ? Take him. He's yours. But there are teams that are always hesitant in that this is a guy we've drafted. They've spent a year working, building. It's this whole emotional attachment to him, you know, that I always find funny. I'm sorry, what was that?
It's called the endowment effect. It's like, oh, we have this. So it's the bird in hand, right?
It's funny that you say the bird in the hand because I don't see a prospect as a bird in the hand. That's the bird in the bush. That's the guy.
I agree.
You look at Michael Porter Jr. and you can see, all right, there's flashes. This guy could be an amazing scorer, blah, blah, blah. He's not that yet. And Jrue Holiday, you've got a team that's ready to make a finals run, and Jrue Holiday is ready to do that. I just don't get it. I think that prospects have to be the worst bet in basketball. I mean, how many of these guys actually pan out?
It's silly, but I want to throw one more team into the mix here, Dave. And I kind of would like to see Jrue Holiday in Dallas.
He'd be perfect.
He's everything you said.
We can say any team.
Everything you said for Denver applies to Dallas to me in that same sense. I don't know if they could pull off the trade or anything like that, but that's a guy that I think, okay, you add him and now that takes them to another level as well.
And I mean, this is why I love Desmond Bane so much in doing my draft homework, because that guy just looks like he's going to be a solid, like for 10 or 12 years, that guy is going to be a solid starter in the NBA. And I know I'm crazy for saying this. I'd take him too before I'd take some of these guys that might bust. But again, I have I'm able to say that because I can say I don't care about the future.
No, but you're saying that you know, I'm sure he's going to be a pro for like, no, you're not.
Well, right. That's even a bet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's like none of these guys are in any, like in this draft above all others, but basically in every draft, none of these guys are sure things. You know, even like I've been working on something on this. Like if you go back, you know, last 17 years since 2000, basically, 2017 drafts, didn't want to like go younger guys than that who haven't really had a chance. Like, if I was going to like tier the guys who came out of that, just over like half of the number one picks have been like tier one or two guys, but there's also been a couple busts in there. So, you could end up with, you know, this is a draft that has some Anthony Bennett potential at the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has some, so, you know, you really talking yourself into something if you're saying this guy's a sure thing, I know it. Whereas a guy who's an NBA player, like, and there's, you know, we don't know Robert Covington would be good on the Warriors, but we have much more evidence to suggest that he would than we would for any college player.
Right, right. So since I've got you guys, you know, I like to lean on your expertise, the fact that you've been in the room. The draft, we're like a week away. And we've already been hearing about bad interviews, bad workouts. I think we saw a bad workout on television. Seth, you've been in the room, man. What are these player interviews like? Do you guys try to make them feel comfortable? Are you trying to keep them off guard? You know, do you give them a lot of coffee? How does this work?
It depends on the circumstances. I think a lot of it is sort of getting to know you a little bit. I kind of feel like if you learn anything new in the interview, something has gone wrong, much earlier in your prep and your background work on a guy. I think you're probably as much looking to confirm what you've already been told and gathered about, you know, a guy's personality. But at the same time, most players at this point, I feel like, are so coached in terms of how to present themselves in that situation that, you know, are you indexing on like verbal dexterity and ability to recall a script? What does that have to do with playing basketball? So I'm somewhat a skeptic in terms of what it actually comes from the interview process.
I feel like it would be more instructive to like take them out for a drink versus.
Well, sure.
Half of these kids can't even drink anymore, Dave.
Well, you know what I'm saying? Like,
no. I'll say that for the guys who are, you know, you're strongly considering, like, yeah, they go out to dinner with the coach, with the GM, the intern who picks them up is actually often like a lower level staffer, not an intern, because they just, you know, they do reports on, you know, the car ride conversation and stuff like that, just to, you know, get maybe a little bit more unguarded. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're learning something new, what have you been doing, especially this year when you've had nothing but time to make phone calls?
Well, with prospects becoming like a big deal earlier and earlier. I mean, someone, I think it might've been Nate Jones, that tweeted about the number of high school kids with their own logos as just like insane right now. I think that those car rides that you just mentioned and getting them out to dinner, you're going to get a more real version than the polished version that you're going to get when they sit in the chair across the table from you and have that interview. That's actually a great idea. I love that they have someone who is actively subterfuging the prospect, giving them a ride and like catching them, you know, because think about it. You may have someone that's super polished in front of the cameras and when, you know, in front of scouts and things like that, who could be a real asshole privately. And now you you're going to have to live with that person for every day for 4 years, you know, or 7 years if you go to that second contract. So that's actually pretty good. Sorry, Mo, I cut you off. What were you about to say?
Well, I think the what you can do in these interviews is eliminate yourself, you know, by coming in and how you act and how you respond. I think some teams go a little too far with the Google like questions, you know what I mean? Like how many golf balls can fit in a jar or whatever, or all these types of things. Like sometimes you go
Wonderlic test.
Yeah. Like you're going a little bit too much into this game there of that, but it's just trying to find out the guy and what they're about and things like that. And that's also part of the draft workout. You know, it's not so much, even though they track it, you know, I know, cause I've had to do the shot charts from it manually of like the shots they make, they miss and da 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 this and that. But it's a lot of times you want to see the competitiveness. How do they compete? What are they doing with the other guys that they're in with these workouts? Are they trying to pick up their teammates? Are they putting them down? Or are they the whole little small things that you may not necessarily get anywhere else? It's all those little things, I think, that you're seeing and you're looking for in that stuff. I'm with Seth I don't know how many guys are going into the interview and walking out going like, yeah, no, he's definitely our guy, you know, but I think there's more opportunities for like, nope, well, I ain't trying to deal with him for 2 years, 3 years.
We've talked about this before with the workout and the old scout or someone having, you know, their mind changed by a workout, like an in-person workout. I mean, Seth, this is a bad thing overall, right? Like you don't want to have any sort of decision pinned on the last impression, right? I'm guessing that by the time a guy works out, you know whether you want to draft him or not. That workout doesn't really matter, but you're now fine-tuning your feeling and maybe you're making a decision between a couple of guys.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance, Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
For my money, the most important part of like bringing a guy in for the workout is the medical. Like that's the real difference maker, where you actually get your training staff able to look at a guy. And if you've in your scouting notes, you note always, oh, he's wearing a knee brace on his left knee. So, you have kind of these problem areas that you examine, and you do all kinds of like unilateral, multilateral, like balance and strength and all that kind of stuff, so that they can identify, yeah, he's weak on his left side and this could be a problem because X, Y, and Z. Now, how much those move the needle, I don't know. There's a certain amount of base covering, but it is like you don't want to realize that you've drafted a guy who is going to be done in 2 years because he has no knee cartilage after the fact. So I think that's in terms of bringing a guy in. In terms of even the stuff Mo is talking about, like, yes, that's important, but you don't want to over-index on what a guy had for breakfast. There's guys who had bad workouts for us, and then you would like talk to them in the training room afterwards. And it's like, yeah, that was my 14th workout in 17 days in 14 sure. different cities. And it's like, oh, yeah, like I can't imagine why he was surly and maybe slightly lethargic. Like he had nothing. And, it's okay, fine. You have to the grind of a season, but that's not a fair representation of, you're not catching him on his best day if you're seeing that.
Why aren't there more pro days? Right? Like, I mean, we saw Clutch do that, and we see it in football a lot, especially for quarterbacks. I don't understand why more agencies aren't putting on pro days. First of all, it's efficient. Second of all, I mean, it's a comfortable environment to conduct these workouts. It's better for the player, I'm assuming.
Yeah. But you don't get in a pro day, you don't necessarily get the competition.
Fair.
Like Clutch is not going to have six of their guys, beat the crap out of each other playing 3-on-3.
I'd pay money to watch that.
Like they're We all would. But some of their guys are going to look good and some of their guys are going to look bad.
They're in the business getting their guys drafted.
Yeah.
Yeah. The pro day is a marketing exercise. And yeah, you can see some stuff. Mm-hmm. You can get some measurements. But I think what people are really hoping to see in the workout is the competitiveness. And, the stuff Mo said is useful. I worry that, especially because a lot of the people who are higher up the decision-making chain, that's going to be their first real impression of a guy. Mm-hmm. And that can sort of thumb the scale based on 20 minutes of 3-on-3 as opposed to 2 years and 25 games of scouting work. And that's something you really do worry about.
I would just personally bring in the Washington Generals for the pro day. I mean, you don't have to worry about getting beat up by any Washington Generals. So I'm just putting that out there.
Well, I mean, if that's the case, I'm available for a paycheck. The thing too, though, Seth, like to that point too, I think some of that is a very dangerous thing. Like we've all had experiences if you've worked in these environments where somebody does fall in love with the guy and you're like, yo, he just got hot for 20 minutes. Like, calm down. Like, that's not how he shoots. It's the draft workout. The everything's part of a piece to the puzzle of who this person is. You know, your scouts who've been scouting them all year, watching film and all that stuff, all of that plays a role into it. It's dangerous when you put in too much stock into just one thing. Right. Mm-hmm. I think that's the important aspect of it. I think you have to look at you have to zoom out and look at the whole puzzle before you're diving into it. I mean, because like, yeah, I've seen it too, where I've walked out of a draft workout and been like, damn, this dude can play. And then watching him later going like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Ooh, God, thank God we didn't draft him. You know, it was like, oh, wow, I was really fooled, you know, or the other way around. I've seen guys completely get torn up in a draft workout and turn out to be solid contributors on teams and so on. So it's there's a lot of variables you got to calculate. I think Seth makes a great point. You got to calculate, like, look, the dude's been on, you know, a whirlwind tour of, you know, six cities in 4 days or whatever, all that fun stuff. And you got to schedule that.
Thank you, Cleveland. So, we're in Detroit.
Yes. You know, all that fun stuff. So I think that's an important aspect. And what you look at when you're trying to evaluate these guys, and ultimately the most important thing, and I think this is every organization, you got to trust the guys you hired to do this all year.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the big thing the higher ups have to understand. Like, I hired this guy to go scout, and he's been in all these weird ass cities, you know, and weird connecting flights and all this stuff to watch these guys. I got to trust him. And that's kind of the real exercise of the draft, and ultimately you find out which teams are really doing their homework and who they trust.
Well, as we wrap, aside from the hearing the term red flag 8,000 times in the next week, what are you guys looking forward to over the next week? There's good stuff coming, right? We're going to get a bunch of trades. What's happening, Mo? What are you looking at?
I mean, I'm just trying to keep up, Dave. This is unbelievable. I mean, we got the draft and free agency and trades and all this stuff and training camp in like a few weeks. Like, it is a nonstop crazy cycle. I'm just trying to keep up. I don't know if I could say I'm looking at one thing. I am literally just trying to make sure I know what the hell is going on. And invariably, just because so much is happening, I'm going to miss a few.
Yeah, I actually, this compressed schedule is really interesting because we all wish that they would close that gap between the draft and free agency under regular circumstances. I'm going to be very curious how the league handles that transition. Because that's a really tight window for them to get everything kind of worked out. And as you mentioned, I mean, training camps should be starting first week of December. Is that kind of where we're at?
That, right?
Seth, what about you?
Yeah, I think that the movement of players and I think we're going to see which teams had a plan, just because there's not enough time to do a lot of balancing. It's funny. This is actually, you know, you and I did the practical exercise at Sport Business Classroom this week, and a lot of the students complained about not having enough time to do stuff. It's like, well, in real life, you have a little more time, and then this year you don't.
No.
So it's going to be a lot. You know, it's going to be a lot more a little bit more seat of the pants than I think a lot of people like to operate.
It's going to be 2 weeks of chaos. Let's just. Plain and simple, 2 weeks of chaos. It's going to be like the trade deadline almost every single day, I think.
And the funny thing is, I'm pretty sure Seth tweeted this, God, a few weeks ago. Like, we're going to find out which front offices are really organized in this short span because of how tight this is. Because it is a bit chaotic. I'm sure they thought they might have had a little more time. They're all, you know, some of these teams are scrambled. I mean, the Rockets, everything's blown up now, so they're in a whole different scramble and things like that. But the more organized teams are going to kind of have at least an idea of what they want to do, and this will favor them.
And there are a lot of really new, like brand new front offices, and this is, there's no better example of getting thrown into the fire than what we're about to see. So I think we're going to get a taste from a lot of these teams that are very new front offices of what the future is going to look like for them. So we'll be back next week when we're going to recap the draft. We're going to try to preview free agency to the best of our ability. Thank you, Seth. Thank you, Mo. Guys, talk to you soon. Go subscribe to The Athletic. Follow The Athletic NBA Show. Give us a good rating and a review. We'll talk to you next week.